Hey everybody. So due to a series of internet service provider issues, we were unable to record this past week. With that being said, we do have a couple backlog episodes, and for the first time to your beautiful ears, you will get to hear one of those. So sorry about the lack of some new content, and if there are a couple outdated references or anything like that, we did record these earlier in quarantine. So I hope you enjoy, and without further ado, let's get on with the episode. Hey there, guys and ghouls.
You are tuned in to broadcast from the Belfry. What am I doing? A confused podcast for the morbidly curious.
My name is Sanjay. I currently have a new watermelon White Claw. I'm not normally a fan of watermelon things, but this is very good. It's sitting across the internet from me with a large glass of wine due to Stubert. Is Georgia. George, how are you doing today? Courtesy of Stubert, that's it.
Well, you know, it was really hot and disgusting yesterday, and today is nice and not hot and rainy.
Yeah, today.
And I haven't put pants on. Well, I've been wearing Stu's sweatpants, so I've basically not put pants on all day. I've not put a bra on all day. This is my hair. Yeah. You can't really see my face, but that's a good thing.
And George's hair doesn't look like a rat's nest. It looks kind of like a fancy beehive do, but like after the queen has left the beehive and like everything's just degenerated to anarchy. So that's a good like gauge of scale for everybody.
I'm in full quarantine mode.
I got off of work 2 hours early and I'm excited because I have a lot of stuff that I want to do, with this being the first and most important, obviously. So I'm very excited. I'm not at work right now.
It's also like the weirdest Memorial Day ever because normally on Memorial Day, I do like the, you know, grilling out kind of thing, but here we are.
Yeah, say Stu loves to do grill dad stuff. I'm surprised he's not.
Ow. He's been playing Assassin's Creed all day, so who knows.
I mean, I guess that's like grilling, you know, in a way.
Yeah, basically. He did, like, my wine is ultimately courtesy of him. I was just gonna give up and not bother, but he walked to the liquor store. I think he mostly just wanted an excuse to go outside and walk in the nice weather. But he walked to the liquor store and got me a bottle of wine.
Aw, so sweet. So exercise. Yeah. Look at him go.
Yep. He was like, walk with me. And I was like, I don't want to put pants on. I don't want to put a bra on. I don't want to do anything to this that is my face and hair. Thanks. Yeah, if our audio is different, deal with it, because we're trying new things.
Yeah, we have had a switcheroo on the recording devices from George's end. It's actually pretty funny. We're also using Zoom instead of Skype or Discord, which we've also used in the past. And but yeah, we're using Zoom, and on my computer, Hope's logged in, so my name is her name, and on George's using Stu's laptop, which he's normally signed into, so she's under his name. So the whole podcast crew is technically here, even though only two of us are looking at each other. Yeah, the other two are still like providing us with the most. It's exciting.
They're here in digital spirit.
Exactly, like Digimon spirit. I agree.
Buy our stickers. That's all I got. The end.
Yeah,
peace out.
We do have stickies. If you would like, they are $2, I think. Pretty sure. You can get them by contacting the podcast, which will have all that information at the very, very end. So fast forward to the last minute of the podcast if you just want to know how to get stickers. But yeah, in short, just contact us and we'll mail you one. It'll be nice. It'll be like a nice Christmas surprise, except you're paying for it. And you know it's going to you because you paid for it. So yeah, It's great. So it's like a self-given birthday present. Happy birthday to you from Broadcast from the Belfry.
But not really, because you paid for it.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like when you go to a bar and it's your birthday and you buy a round of shots. And it's like, technically, I'm giving you all stuff and yeah. I'm giving myself something. But like, it's still a gift. Like, I don't know. Some people got stuff.
Or if you don't want to buy a sticker, you could do something really, really cool. I'm not going to give out any guidelines. Just do something really cool that we think is really cool, and maybe we'll send you one, because yeah. we're also cool.
It's true. I mean, we are 35, 36 episodes in. You guys have a pretty good gauge for our humor and what we think is cool. If you do something that you're like, oh, I bet they would like this, or oh, I bet Sanjay would hate this, or like, oh, I bet Georgia would hate this, we'll just send you a sticky, you know? We love support in any yep. way that you can provide it. We are a Come As You Are podcast, so yeah, do something, shake your feet out, you know, get a little foot loose.
This episode is brought to you by not kink shaming, as you will find out.
Oh, I thought that was a joke, but like a serious one, because we don't kink shame in this household. We do not.
We don't kink shame, and this episode is hardcore, no kink shaming. Speaking of things you're gonna hate, today's episode is a little all over the place. You're really gonna hate the first part of it, and it's gonna make you upset. It makes me upset, and it's gonna make you really angry.
Yay.
But you're also gonna like it, because it takes place in Georgia. All so right. have your normal accent.
Nice. Literally the way I speak currently. We brought it up before, but I'm from Georgia, so yeehaw, everybody. Spent a fair amount of my life there, but have lived in Kansas for half of my life now, so it doesn't matter. I'm gonna sound like I'm from Manhattan. I'm gonna have the Manhattan lisp. I'm gonna talk about going to Dirty Dogs. I don't know, what else do people in Manhattan do? Talk about about cookie bakes, you know?
Luna is here, she's just chilling on the bed.
I can see her right butt cheek and her little tail.
That's her butt right there. Oh, yep. There's a tail. She's like, don't touch me.
What are we podcasting about today? What am I going to be excited and upset about simultaneously?
So the general theme of the podcast is going to be, I would say, Satanic Panic.
Cool name for a band. Not a cool time to actually live through, I assume.
So I'm gonna start off with a true crime tale.
Oh no, Satanic Panic sounds like a hair really... dye. That's it. Cool.
Oh, Manic Panic. Mm-hmm. Before you could get that shit in Walmart and you could only get it like Hot Topic.
Yep, those were the glory days. Talk to Hope and I about good old hair dyeing adventures.
Those were my high school days, and I always had the hot pink one on hand.
Ooh. Ooh, ooh.
Yeah, I was so edgy with my pink hair at the Warped Tour circa 2003.
Da-da-da-da, Warped Tour. I don't know, like, any of the words to the rock show except for Warped Tour. I love Blink-182 in the last few years. I've gotten, like, become a, like, pretty big fan, and, like, I love the rock show. No, none of the words. Just da-da-da-da, Warped Tour, and I scream it like that every time.
You should probably figure that out. Or you know what? Don't. You do you. No kink shaming.
No kink shaming. Remember that, alright?
No kink shaming. Okay, so I first heard... I'm going to tell you the story about the murders at Corpsewood Manor.
Was it in Corpsewood before the murders happened? Just for scale, yes. I need to know. All right, yes. Excellent. Continue.
So, I heard, what was I doing? I was like, I think it was when I was making dinner sometime last week, and I was listening to another podcast, Morbid, which some of you probably listen to. It's very on par with our vibes, you know? It's mostly true crime, sometimes paranormal.
Always one
lots
person
of tangents
upset.
And banter.
Yeah. Tanter and
lots of
bandits.
Oh my gods.
I haven't said oh my god that much recently.
That's true. Maybe today we'll turn things around.
I also haven't said I don't know her in the podcast yet, and I've been saying that a lot in real life. So, yeah, also be grateful for that.
Okay. So, I heard about this on Morbid. Mm-hmm. Our story begins in the 1970s with a guy named Charles Scudder.
Is that the year you were born?
No, that was way before I was born. Okay. Thank you just very much.
Just check it.
Fuckwad. Okay. So he was a professor of pharmacology at Loyola in Chicago. And he was also the co-director of the Institute for the Study of Mind, Drugs, and Behavior Experiments. And his main job was basically to study the effects of a type of LSD that the government created.
Cool.
So that's kind of cool. He was a widowed father of four sons, but they were all like grown up and adults and had their own lives. Mm-hmm. And he had two mastiffs named Beelzebub and Azanath, which should already tell you something about his personality and interests. 100%. You know, Beelzebub being one of the princes of hell, also known as Lord of the Fries. And I said fries and I meant to say
you
fries. Did.
But, you meant fries. Like Ronald McDonald's totally evil twin. Like Beelzebub. Talking,
like Ronald McDonald could hands down be a prince of hell. He is a creepy bastard.
Yeah, he's the Lord of the Grill. And then Beelzebub is Lord of the Fries. Lord That's of the how fries. That works out. Like they work in Got harmony. It. It's a Lord of the Grill.
And then Azanath is actually a Lovecraft character. Yeah, she is from The Thing on the Doorstep, which is basically about this guy who goes off to college and he meets this girl and they get married and he starts like not remembering things and like having these weird out-of-body memories and stuff. Long story short, the girl was actually not really a girl. She basically, her body was possessed by this conscious of her wizard grandfather, basically, and he was like trying to do all kinds of occult shit to, you know, open portals and let in the elder gods or whoever, whatever he was trying to do. It's been a while since I read it, but well the guy ends up killing the girl to get rid of like the grandpa. But before he does that, she like successfully switches bodies. And so he wakes up in her dead body and he somehow manages to like crawl to his best friend's doorstep. And like the story is written as an account of the best friend and why he shot this creature in the face. So,
as the girl was dying, like she was like body swap and he woke up in her body and was she still dying at that point? Or had she died and, like, she was reanimated, or he became reanimated in her body, kind of? I feel like those are two like, distinct things.
Yeah, it's really complicated, and it's been a while since I read it. I know that, like, because he gets arrested for shooting his best friend, so it's somehow his body, but he's, like, fighting for his conscience to stay in his body and not hers. It is really complicated.
But it ends but up with basically, this other guy, like, going.
Yeah.
Gun. Yeah. Bang. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's, like, told from the perspective of the best friend, like, in a psych ward or something. It's an interesting story if you're ever bored and want something weird to read. There's also a remake of it that's available on Amazon. It's, like, not even a B-rated movie. It's, like, an F-rated movie.
Oh, like, hell yeah. That's what I like to hear.
Like, hands down, parts of it look like a home movie. But they do, Lovecraft movies are never made well because they're really hard to make well and without being super fucking cheesy. But they really, like, they don't have the budget for special effects or anything, which I think kind of helps in capturing things in a Lovecraftian way because he never described the horror or you don't ever, like, see it in the story. So it kind of helps them not actually portray anything terrifying and just really leaves it all up to your imagination. So,
which is kind of good, but also it's a thing.
Yeah, but the acting is also like pretty cheesy. Anyway, one of his dogs is named after the girl character, the not girl character. So he was obviously well read and obviously intelligent to have that kind of career. People said that he was brilliant, eccentric. He's obviously an academic professor, but he would dye his hair like purple. There was a time when he had a pet monkey.
Did he name it Annie's Boobs?
I hope so. He taught himself to play the harp and to make stained glass windows. Nice. And yeah, I'm like, this is the 70s, so he's a fucking weirdo. And he had a huge collection of books. Like I said, he was well-read and smart. And he also, I didn't find if he just had a connection to the Church of Satan or if he was officially a member of the Church of Satan or what. He had some affiliation with the Church of Satan. And one of the pieces of stained glass that he had made was the main symbol, like the seal of Baphomet, the pentagram with the goat head kind of in the middle of it.
Oh, yeah.
That's like the main symbol.
I know.
We'll talk about that later. We'll get there. You can rant all you want.
Okay. Did we talk about this before we recorded yesterday? Like, my thoughts on Sabrina?
I think we talked about it afterwards. After okay.
We were done. Yeah. Well, you guys will hear that rant later, so let's keep plugging along.
Yeah, so he's obviously a horror fan. He was really into antiques, and I imagine all the stuff, like all his collectible things and things he were into is going to be me in 20 years because he was into gothic aesthetic antiques and, you know, that kind of vibe. And I'm like looking.
Yeah, you and your cat skeleton that's just always in your room just for fun.
He also, much to his reputation in the 70s, he lived with his housekeeper slash partner, whose name was Joseph Odom. And he'd been his housekeeper for over 20 years. I don't know, like, how long they had a relationship. Like I said, the guy was a widower. So he had a wife at one point. So who knows, like, what kind of relationship they had before that or anything.
Probably a wild one, I would assume.
And it's not clear if they had, like, an open relationship or if they were in a committed relationship or what. But I think they had a really strong connection as a couple. And you'll see why later. And then Odom, the partner, was kind of the opposite. He only had a fifth grade education, but he taught himself to be really good at, like, basic skills. And he really liked cooking, so he kind of made a living doing that. And obviously, he was his housekeeper, so I assume he made money doing that for other people at some point. So Dr. Scudder eventually decided he wanted to peace out of the city, leave behind any social restrictions about his eccentricities and his sexuality. And he said that students didn't really want to learn anymore. They were just in college because they had to be. And the university itself became too much about politics and less about educating people.
Wow, what a modern take.
He came home each night and he said, like, what made him happy the most was putting on his raggedy old patched up jeans and working in his garden. And he wrote about this in a article that he wrote for Mother Earth News in 1981, which used to be a magazine. I think it's only online now, but my mom used to subscribe to that magazine because it would come to my house when we were in high school, and it had all kinds of stuff about, like, sustainability and people who give away their shit to live off the grid, or ways to, like, homestead in your house and stuff like that.
Oh, nice.
Hippie shit. Yep. Yeah.
Capital H, capital S, hippie shit.
Yep. So he decided he wanted to move out of Chicago, which, like, he had a nice house there. He said he wanted to move to the middle of nowhere with his partner and his dogs, and they were going to build their dream home. He didn't want to owe anybody anything, so he didn't care for electricity or, you know, like, city water or anything like that. They ended up finding 40 acres of woodland in northern Georgia.
Okay, just a very small lot.
And on his 50th birthday, he resigned from the university. And when he left, he took 2 human skulls and a metric shit ton of LSD from his lab.
Ooh.
Like, the reports that put a quantity to it say something like 12,000 doses.
What? How do you just take, did he just walk in with three briefcases or just like a duffel bag and it was like, oh, I've got my my documents in here. You just hear LSD rustling. And that's it. Like,
well,
it just...
imagine if they were like in vials. And I mean, you don't need that much. It's fucking LSD. You just need like a tiny little drop, right?
I mean, yeah, and if you're dropping, or I guess if he was doing sheets, and that's also very small. I am not a drug doing person, but I know a lot about drugs. That's, I don't know, I guess a thing about me. Or I know a fair amount
about, like, drugs. I said, a metric shit ton.
Too much drug.
He auctioned off everything he owned, and they went to build their little kingdom in the middle of nowhere, and it's really cute, and I want one.
Me too, dude.
So, on the road leading up to their property, they came across a decomposing horse in the middle of the road. So they decided to name the road going up to where their house would be. They called it Dead Horse Road. Cool name.
Okay, yep.
I'm on board.
Naturally.
And so they built themselves a brick mansion. I think I read that it was like 48,000 bricks that they laid by hand. And it took them 2 years. And so they built it while they lived out of a little camper. And they called it their castle. It was two stories. It had an outhouse instead of like a full bathroom. It just had an outhouse. And then there was a pump system and a well for water. Mm-hmm. There was no electricity, so he didn't have to owe anybody anything for utilities. There was a wood stove. They had a vineyard where they would grow all kinds of different fruits. And they ended up making their own wine out of both fruit and vegetables. And it was apparently really potent. And they would just experiment with different flavors and stuff. Mm-hmm. They also grew their own food, and they had beehives for honey and wax, and they would use the wax to make candles. Odom had a rose garden, which was guarded by this big pink gargoyle. Totally on board.
Yeah.
There is a study and a library, and then Scudder made stained glass to decorate the insides, and he also painted, and so he decorated with a lot of his art, and... he had that like whole antique goth horror aesthetic.
I feel like, and then there was a bad game of Clue. Like, this just sounds like a description of like Clue 3.0 or whatever. And you're just gonna be like, now guess who got killed, like, in the rose garden with a stained glass knife or something. Like, it.
Oh, you're gonna find out.
All right.
Cool. And it's gonna upset you.
Cool. Love it.
So, finally. There was a three-story chicken house, which was separate from the main house.
Chicken and mansion. Apparently,
they called it a chicken house. The first story of it was for the chickens, and then the second story was for storage. And I also read in one thing that that's where they also stored their pornography and sex paraphernalia.
Why?
But who knows? I don't know. That. And then on the third story was called the Pink Room, and like the walls were painted pink and everything in it was pink, and there was just tons of mattresses that had pink sheets on them.
How big was this? I'm thinking of like a chicken coop, but three stories, so like 7 by 7 feet, like, is a huge one.
It's bigger than that. Yeah, it's like a big, yeah, structure.
Okay, so it's like an actual like Stardew Valley style like chicken coop, where it's like very like, it's a small house in essence that's three stories. Okay. Uh-huh. That's very different.
Yep.
Why wouldn't you have pornography on the top floor? It, just keep going. Yeah, I have a lot of questions about this chicken structure, but I'll just get over it.
We'll keep going. So the third floor, the pink room, is where they would entertain their guests. It was accessible only by a 40-foot ladder, and it was so that they could keep their main house like as their private space. So they would just hang out with people in the pink room, and they would give them their homemade wine, and they'd just hang out, and nice. Like, it was cool. Awesome. Yeah. It's kind of like a treehouse, it sounds like. And they had like lots of friends come over and stuff like that, and everyone was super chill. Construction was completed during the winter, and they were like, what are we going to name our new little castle? And they looked around and they saw, you know, all the dead trees. It's winter, and that's why it's called Corpsewood.
Oh, nice. That's less spooky and gross than I thought.
In 1982, this shithead named Kenneth Avery Brock. He's 17 years old. He meets these guys. He comes to their house to ask for permission to hunt on their land because they have a shit ton of it. And they were like, yeah, that's cool, whatever, which wasn't unusual. Lots of people would ask. They didn't care if you hunted on their land as long as you, like, introduce yourself and ask for permission. Mm-hmm. And they were like, yeah, sure, whatever. You know, they were sharers. Mm-hmm. And it started out that he would end up going over to hang out with them from time to time and, like, hang out in the pink room and drink wine with them and be super chill. And, like, it probably is kind of weird because he's 17 and hanging out with a couple of 50-year-old dudes that he just randomly met.
Yeah, to ask to, like, shoot stuff. It's a little bit sketchy. Just a little bit.
Stories changed and his accounts flip-flopped a lot, but it's inferred that something sexual did happen, or he tried to initiate something and they were like, nah, dude. So it's kind of hard. What it sounds like to me is someone who is 17 in the 80s in Georgia, not in a good social environment for struggling with their sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
So this kid ends up moving into a trailer with this 30-year-old dude named Samuel Tony West.
Oh, that's a cool name. He should just go by Tony West. He could do whatever he wanted. Pilot, superhero.
I think he did go by Tony. Nice. So these guys stuck. So Brock tells West about these queer devil worshippers that he met. And he just, like, made up his mind that they were super rich and hiding tons of money on their property. And he ends up expressing a lot of anger towards the couple, probably because of, like, whatever sex thing may or may not have happened.
Mm-hmm.
And his own frustrations. Obviously, he was ashamed of thinking that he might be gay and not knowing how to deal with that in conservative South.
In the, what, is it the 80s at this point?
Yeah, 82.
Mm-hmm.
West was your typical early 80s white southern trash dude. And he would give shit because whatever happened, Brock told him about it. And so, like, West would make fun of him for it. And so Brock starts saying that, like, they took advantage of him and, like, targeted them, making him look like he was a victim. It's just sad that anyone would have to have those struggles with their sexuality. He obviously didn't have the resources, any supportive resources, which honestly he would have if he had gone to talk to these two gay dudes that he just started hanging out with, you know?
We know
how that works.
Exactly.
So Brock even went so far as to say, so they, like, start making these plans to rob this house, right? And Brock says that he wanted to take a heated welding iron and rape Dr. Scudder with it. And even Tony was like, yeah, dude, let's just rob them. Like, what the fuck?
You're like, that's too much. Like, what's wrong with you?
He was just, like, overcompensating for something, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then in November of 1982, Brock started to go and hang out with them a few times to try and get the layout of the house, but they never invited him into the house. They only let him in the pink room, so that didn't work out super great for him.
Mm-hmm.
And then in December 12th was when their robbery plan was set in motion. Weirdly, they picked up Tony's 17-year-old nephew, Joey, and a girl he was taking out on a date, on their first date. Her name was Teresa.
Cool. Do you know what would be better than going to see a movie? Robbing some dudes. That sounds
so
right.
Just wait. The shit's bananas. Tony is like, yo, you want to go joyriding? And he's like, okay, I guess. And Tony says that Joey knew the plan the whole time. And Joey's like, no, the fuck I didn't. And I'm going to side with Joey on this one for reasons that we'll get to. On the way to joyriding, I guess, Brock was like, I got to stop by my mom's place to get my rifle. And he said that he just wanted to go rabbit hunting later.
Mm-hmm.
And then they say to Joey and Teresa, hey, you guys want to check out that Corpsewood Manor place and drink? And Joey's 17, and he's like, fuck yeah, free wine, and I'm a minor.
Mm-hmm.
And Teresa's like, IDK, I heard they're devil worshippers because it's Georgia in the 80s, and these guys are weirdos and not living to societal norms. On the way there, they all start huffing something called Toodaloo, which is paint thinner, alcohol, and glue.
What the fuck? Okay.
I I can't. I don't understand. So,
like vodka or like rubbing alcohol?
Like rubbing alcohol.
Cool.
Yeah. So like poison. Just yeah. Poison.
Like literally just mixing up poison and just like inhaling it until your eyes don't work and just being like, all right, this is cool. Yeah. Let's do whippets like a normal person. Fuck.
I feel great. So Scudder was supposedly super happy to see them and he's like, hey guys, can I bum a cigarette? And they were like, yeah, okay. So he tells them to go hang out in the pink room and he goes off to get some wine. Mm-hmm. And after a while, they're hanging out in the pink room and Brock's like, oh, I'm going to go to my car to get some more Toodaloo. And he comes back and he has his rifle and Scudder's like, whatever, this is weird. I'm used to hunters hanging around here. So mm-hmm. He just kind of like makes it less awkward and tries to diffuse the situation with humor. And they all go back to drinking their wine for a little bit. Oh my god, what did I just do?
In the meantime, I'm going to open this other can. Just get it ready for a little bit of ASMR. That was pretty weak, honestly.
Scudder gets up eventually for whatever reason. And Brock just like got up and grabbed him by the hair and pulled a knife out of his boot, holds it against his throat. Mm-hmm. And is like, where's your fucking money? And he's like, I don't have any money, dude.
Yeah, like, I spent it all on this house. I haven't had a job in, like, however long. I'm selling candles and fucking like, bum wine to
pay for what he's like, I don't need money. The land provides me with everything I need. Mm-hmm. I don't have any money because I don't need it. So Teresa and Joey at this point are like, what the fuck? Let's peace out. And they try to run away, but Tony stops them and is like, if you don't come back, we'll kill you. That's his nephew, by the way. Let's not forget. Yeah, Joey's Tony's nephew.
He's like, I'll catch you at the family reunion. Fucking cap your knees. Yeah. Get ready. Tell your mom I said hi, asshole. Like, what kind of relationship do they have? This is wild.
So Brock keeps demanding money, and he ends up gagging Scudder, and he ties him up. And he keeps saying, I don't have any money. I guess he had a small inheritance from when his dad died. Mm-hmm. But it was in the bank like a normal person. He doesn't have a fucking Scrooge McDuck room that he just goes and rolls around in, you know?
Yeah, and he's not Mr. Krabs and just puts all his money in his mattress because he doesn't trust banks.
Yeah. Like, Brock is like, all right, I'm going to go take care of anyone else in the house. And they're like, what does that mean? Okay. So he goes in the house and Odom is cleaning up after dinner. Brock opens the door and screams at him to get out. And he just kind of, Odom just kind of looks up and is like, what the fuck's going on?
Yeah, like, it's my and house. You get out.
Brock shot him 4 times, mostly in the head.
What?
And then their 2 dogs were just curled up by the fireplace, fast asleep, hadn't even moved or anything. And he shoots both of them several times too, super fucking sad.
Yeah.
And so he goes back to the pink room and he's like, well, I killed that man and those dogs.
Like, you mean you killed my partner and our dogs? Thanks, Chad. Love it. Like, yeah. Great for us.
So Brock later to police, Brock claimed that Odom reached for a gun. He didn't have a gun anywhere near him.
Yeah.
And then after that, he claimed that he just shot wildly and the bullets were ricocheting everywhere and 4 of them just happened to go in that guy's head, you know?
It's weird.
I don't know what happened. And the dogs.
I just can't even begin to fathom the odds that that would happen. They are absurd odds, though.
So then Brock and West decide they're going to lead Scudder into the house so that he can take them to, like, wherever his money is stashed. And then they forced Joey and Teresa to go with them. This is really sad. They open the door and Odom was shot in the kitchen, but as they opened the door into the hallway, his body was in there. So he wasn't dead when Brock left him. He'd been shot 4 times and he was still trying to crawl to get help or like something. Fuck? They didn't have a phone. So I don't know like what their emergency plan was, but
climb to the road and scream, I guess.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
also my emergency plan. Yeah, whenever I'm like sad or whatever.
This is why I think that they were in love and nice, committed, beautiful, relationshipy people. Mm-hmm. Because when they walked in, Teresa gave her full account of everything to the cops. And she said that he just let out this, like, really sad groan of despair. And he was so upset, obviously, seeing his partner like, dead in front of him. Mm-hmm. And then Tony's like, where's your money? Where's your money? And where's your soldering iron? And he's like, I don't have any money. I don't even have electricity. I don't have the soldering iron because I can't use one. Like,
yeah.
What the fuck, dude? I don't have any fucking money. That's just fucked up because that goes back to what Brock originally said about the welding, like, raping him with the welding.
Holy shit, yeah.
So luckily they didn't have electricity. And then finally, I guess, because I would be, but I'd say that Scudder was just tired of telling these idiots that he didn't have any money. And he was just so heartbroken about his partner that he, like, shuffled over to his body. Tony made him sit down on a couch or something while he was, like, screaming in his face.
Yeah.
But he, like, got up and he shuffled over to Odom's body. And, like, the whole time, Tony's screaming at him to sit down and get back, sit down. Scudder just says, I asked for this. And then Tony ended up shooting him 5 or 6 times before he died.
How the fuck did he think that he deserved that? That's so sad.
I know.
He literally just had a dream, lived out that dream, minding his own business, doing what he and his partner wanted, and he died.
Yeah.
That's so sad.
People don't know if it meant he was just, he asked for it because he was trusting of strangers and invited them into his home, or if it was because he dared to live out his life and be himself and not give a shit about social norms.
Yeah, that's probably 50-50.
In Georgia in the 80s. So there's like some speculation about what he meant by that.
Man, that's so depressing.
I know.
Is this the part you said I wouldn't like?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. This is so sad.
I told you that I was upset by it.
I'm gonna make a tiny home and name it after their house. Like, I'm just gonna...
Seriously.
So sweet.
Wes tells Brock and Joey to go upstairs and steal whatever they could. This is what they ended up taking from the house. A bag of dimes and nickels, a silver candelabra, and a gold-plated knife. And they ended up stealing their Jeep as well.
Wow,
that's all they got.
It's totally worth it. It's totally worth a that's double homicide. That's all they got.
One of Scudder and Odom's friends comes up to the manor a couple days later just to tell them that one of their other friends had died. Mm-hmm. And he sees bullet holes in the kitchen door, so he calls the cops. And then after that's when, like, Teresa got the confidence to be like, yeah, I know what happened. Let me tell you. And she was just like, this is what fucking happened. I never want to go on another date ever again.
She was like, this wasn't even the worst first date I've ever been on, but it was in the top 5.
At this point, Wes and Brock are on the run. Mm-hmm. It still gets fucked up. Wes and Brock are on the run, and Wes says, so they pull over at a gas station to switch vehicles because they're still in Scudder's Jeep at this point. And I think they're in Mississippi at this point. And they catch this guy at the gas station. He is Navy Lieutenant Kirby Phelps, and they tie his hands up and they're like, oh, we're just gonna tie him up to a tree and then steal his car. But fucking Wes ends up shooting him in the head twice.
What is wrong with this
for
guy?
Why does he
love murdering so much? These people, like, are innocent.
Literally, you were gonna get his car regardless. Why did you have to shoot him?
Yeah, you would have had it's one less charge up. Of anything. Like, I cannot. So,
Brock ended up turning himself in on December 20th, so that's 8 days later, and then Tony ended up turning himself in on Christmas Day, and he had made it to Tennessee, and he told the county sheriff in Tennessee, all I can say is that they were devils and I killed them, that's how I feel about it.
Okay.
So, during the investigation of all their occult-themed art and gothic aesthetic antiques and, like, Church of Satan imagery were found, and, you know, it's the 80s and people judge them for that. And they also, this is really sad too, they found a piece of art painted by Scudder, and it was a self-portrait of him gagged and with 5 bullet wounds in his head, and it turns out that Odom had a nightmare and described it to Scudder, and he was disturbed by it and said that he just had to paint it. So it's like a fucking prophetic nightmare.
What the fuck? Like, yeah. Odom literally had a premonition this is going to happen. Maybe that's what he meant by, like, this is what I deserve. He painted and, I guess, as a result, brought into existence.
He painted himself, dream. Gagged That's another theory that, yeah, people have. They just, it's so sad.
Yeah, that is a bit different. Welcome to Sadcast from the Belfry, where we're just sad all the time because some nice men died.
Yeah, well, I'm part of it. You know, I'm super into true crime, and I was like, why have I not heard this story before? This is fucking bananas, bonkers, and super sad. Bonkers. And it's like a prime case of how fucked up things were in the 80s, and it was really depressing. After the investigation, the chicken house was burned down, and then a few months later, the main house, or maybe it was a few years, I don't know. Eventually, the main house was burned down as well. And this case was referred to as the devil worshiper case, and they were labeled as homosexual devil worshippers who deserved what they got, which is just, I can't imagine. There was a documentary made by conservative religious asshats who basically said that they got what they asked for. And the host of it tried to get Teresa to say that they had all been drugged, that the wine that they were given was laced with the LSD that Scudder took from his lab.
What the fuck? And that was why West, like, lost his mind. Clearly he was already crazy if, like, him and Brock were already, like, doing this shit and, like, got the gun and all that before.
Yeah. Teresa was like, nope, they were cool and nice and didn't drug us, and we all drank the same wine and it wasn't drugged, and no, they did not deserve this. And then the defense attorney was hung up on the fact that the wine was laced with LSD, even though there was, like, no evidence of it anywhere. And the LSD that they did find was put away in a box, in a desk, not used all the time. You know, obviously wasn't, like, a regular thing or anything.
Yeah, they're like, oh, it's Friday night, we're gonna watch Jeopardy and do LSD. Not like, oh, we have a random person coming to our house, time to break out the acid. Yeah, that's so whack.
So Brock never once claimed to have been drugged or anything until his defense lawyers told him that there was LSD on the premises. And when he was in jail, like, waiting for everything to be tried and everything, they asked him if he had read up on the effects of LSD or anything, and he just goes, not till I got in here. And then his story changed to say that he had been drugged.
Wow, I'm glad he was at least honest about it. Like,
yeah.
So honest. Idiot. Yeah.
So he was found guilty on all counts because he killed Odom and the dogs. And he was sentenced to 3 consecutive life sentences, which he's still serving at Georgia State Prison. And then Tony was found guilty. So he shot Scudder and then the Navy lieutenant. So he was found guilty and was sentenced to death by electric chair, but the death penalty was repealed, so he's serving a life sentence in Augusta.
Why is he just serving one life sentence?
I think it's because his death penalty was repealed, but I don't.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
They both, like, appealed for parole and stuff and have been denied.
Yeah, for good reason. If you just killed innocent dudes before, what if you're just at a Zaxby's one day, and you're like, oh wow, I can't believe they're at a lemonade, gun, and just start killing people again. Like, oh, that guy is of the devil because he got the last glass of lemonade. Like, no.
You're at an IHOP, and you said, I want no fucking whipped cream on my waffles, and then you fucking go on a murder spree.
It's Georgia.
Sorry. I love Waffle House. Yes. Waffle House is trash, but I love it.
One of my friends recently said that Denny's was better than Waffle House, which is just a fucking lie.
No.
I am a firm believer in a system that I need to write down because I keep forgetting the exact attributes, but that you have a choice when you want breakfast food at any time of the day. You will get either good service, good food, or a good price. And Denny's, Waffle House, and IHOP can only provide 2 of the 3 each, and it rotates. So depending on, like, what you have, if you want, like, a good price and good food, then you go to Denny's. But you are not going to get good service. There is a 0% chance. Like, I think every time I've been to Denny's, my waitress is complaining that she's been there for, like, 26 hours straight because 2 people called in at the last second. And, like, her baby's just, like, screaming in the parking lot. Every time.
And she has, like, 2 other jobs, at least 2 other jobs. Oh, yeah,
definitely. She's like, I got a break, but, like, her break was her sleeping in her car for 17 minutes before, like, the cook told her she had another order. So, yeah, I will write down the Baker system for restaurant ratings. And we'll provide that at some point. And I'll talk about all my Denny's, IHOPs, and Waffle House experiences. And boy howdy, there are a lot of them.
You know how the goth kids in South Park go to, do they go to IHOP or Denny's? I can't remember. They go at like midnight and they just sit at a table and drink coffee. Yep. That was me and my friends in high school. And we also had to drive like 30 miles to get to a fucking IHOP. So we were committed. There was a small private funeral held at Corpsewood for Odom and Scudder. And Odom's ashes were scattered in his rose garden.
Oh.
Scudder's body was sent back to his sister in Milwaukee, because that's what she wanted, and he's, like, in their family plot. And people, like, so it's burned down, but there are still brick ruins there. I think, like, the main entryway is still there. And then there's, like, you can tell where the outside walls were. And people say that, like, they'll go out there, and they sometimes hear a harp playing, or glass shattering, or sometimes gunshots, which is sad. These guys, like, it just makes me, these guys sounded awesome. They sound like people my mom would be friends with 100%.
They sound like people I would be friends with. Like, they just sound cool.
I know. Age-wise, they sound like people my mom would be friends with. But, like, hands down, I would legit just be like, I know I'm younger than you, but I still want to hang out with you in the pink room and drink your wine and just talk shit. And,
Like, tell me what the chickens did today. Like, because you know all the chickens had interesting names, too. Like, they weren't just, like, chicken.
Can I come and feed your chickens? Yes. I know. Honestly, if the house still existed, I'd be like, I'm gonna buy this house. And then I'd just go in there and be like, I don't know if your ghost's up on here, but, you know, if you are and you didn't want to leave your kingdom, that's cool. I appreciate you guys. You got cool vibes. Like, I'm gonna install electricity because sometimes I like to be a piece of shit and binge Netflix all day. Yeah. But you can 100% sit your spirit ass down and watch some American Horror Story with me.
Exactly.
Like, let's do this. And then I'd have a sweet mini castle of my own with a couple of friendly ghosts and a couple of friendly ghost dogs, and it would be great.
A couple of Caspers and a couple of Zeros? Yeah. No, what's the dog from Frankenweenie?
Zero, yeah.
No, from Frankenweenie. Because I think that was a living dog that died during the movie, I think.
I don't remember. Zero is Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah.
And then
there's a dog from Corpse Bride whose name I don't remember.
So that was 82, the height of the Satanic Panic, which apparently is more accurately known as Satanic Ritual Abuse for some reason. But that sounds not as cool as Satanic Panic at all.
Yeah, that sounds cool.
So, like, cases of Satanic Panic in the U.S., including this one, were at their height in the 80s and early 90s. And I read a lot about this today, which kind of blew my mind a little bit. And also, it was, like, so much information that I was like, I don't know what I just read, and I'm not in the mindset to actually comprehend everything. But basically, it involves reports of physical and sexual abuse within the context within the context of a cult or satanic rituals. Even the witch hunts in the 16th and 17th century were in the category of satanic panic because everyone was losing their shit for no reason.
Yeah.
It's also called a moral panic. And apparently, this is like what I read a shit ton about when I just kind of started drooling, but there were five factors leading up to the 80s that like set the scene for satanic panic to really grab society by the balls and squeeze. So one being the establishment of fundamentalist Christianity, they can just fuck off. I will shame that king, honestly. The second was the rise of the anti-cult movement, which spread the idea that abusive cults would kidnap your children, basically.
Yes.
And then there was the establishment of the Church of Satan by Anton LaVey in 1966, which we'll talk about in a minute. And then there was the fourth factor, the development of social work as a field and the fight to get child abuse recognized as a real crime.
Oh.
And apparently that had a... Yeah, this is the part that, like, mind-fucked me, because apparently there was a big influence over the idea of satanic cults. And maybe it was because people just didn't want to think that their parents or that people who were parents or caregivers could just abuse children because they were shitty people and they didn't want to, like... confront that as being a possibility. So that's my theory. I don't really know. There is a ton of information about it. The fifth thing being the popularization of the idea of PTSD and other issues that survivors of traumatic events have to deal with. And I guess there was like a whole movement surrounding that is another interesting concept. This is when a lot of mental health breakthroughs were being made. And I think this time people maybe were understanding more about mental health issues, but I think a lot of people were still willing to blame things on demonic possession before they would consider something being an illness.
Which is absurd in itself. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, oh, they cry themselves to sleep every night. Must be the demons getting them. Like, okay. Right. Just hug your fucking children.
A guy named Jeffrey Victor, who wrote a book called Satanic Panic in the 90s, in it he claims that the people most likely to believe in rumors of abusive ritual cults are rural, poorly educated, white, religiously conservative, blue-collar families with an unquestioning belief in American values who feel significant anxieties over job loss, economic decline, and family disintegration. My first thought was AKA Trump supporters, and my second thought was I took my job.
Yeah.
A park.
Holy shit. Just like the demons are the reason I lost my career. Like, demons like, don't give a shit, man.
What the fuck? A satanic cult got together and summoned a demon to make you lose your job because they give a shit about targeting you specifically as a piece of shit human. Like,
I just highly doubt. It's just so not probable. Yeah. Let me just unroll my eyes for a second. Oh, please. Okay.
I would argue that the most well-known case of satanic panic in the U.S. would be that of the West Memphis Three. Do you know about that?
No.
God damn it. Okay, this is probably the case that got me into true crime. Honestly, I wrote like a couple of papers on it in high school and then like my freshman year in college.
Wow, way to plagiarize yourself.
Okay, the West Memphis Three were three teenagers who are now grown men. They were arrested and charged with the murder of three children in West Memphis, Arkansas in 1993, even though there was literally no evidence that tied them. Anything that they did find might have been circumstantial, but there was no actual evidence that tied them to the murders. And they were targeted because they were your black banty wearing early 90s misfits listening, like, you know, shithead kids.
Yep, that and is literally most the of demographic them, I was assuming they were blaming. So that's, yeah, good. Very yes, nice.
Yes, like hardcore scapegoat. They wore their banties and their Hot Topic pants and their giant boots.
Mm-hmm.
And they, one of them, the main guy, Damien Eccles, he was really into art, and he talked about his like magic practices a lot because he didn't conform to Christian spirituality. And all of them suffered from mental illnesses of one kind or another. One of them, I think he was 18 or 17 or 18 when they were arrested, but he had the mental age of like a 6-year-old, I think, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And like he was the only one that confessed because when he was interrogated, he didn't have any adult supervision and they basically bullied him into confessing.
Aww.
So he was tried separately because he confessed for him, but not the other two.
Yeah.
And so they were, I don't know if you ever see, like in my Warped Tour days, a lot of people wore Free the West Memphis 3 shirts, like back mm-hmm. in the early 2000s, because it was like a huge thing. There's lots of celebrity outreach to like raise money to get them more appeals. And they were in prison for 18 years before they were finally released. I think in 2010 was when they were released.
Holy shit.
But yeah, I'll probably do a whole episode about that at some point because mm-hmm. it was my gateway case. So I got a lot of hardcore feelings about that. Also, like, as a kid who, you know, like, I had a pentacle necklace and I always wore black band t-shirts and, mm-hmm. fucking, you know, like, I was one of those kids in high school. Like, it was different because it wasn't the early 90s, it was the early 2000s, but same but, vibe, you know? Yeah.
Also, in my opinion, the 90s didn't end until 2004, and I will debate that at any point in time.
Oh, what was I watching the other day? And I was like, this is 2000s, but it's basically the 90s. Look at their terrible outfits.
Exactly. So, like, yeah. Fashion and just general, like, culture didn't awful. Change oh. until Usher dropped the jam, Yeah, Three Times in 2004. That was the beginning of a new generation, and Yeah, Three Times ushered it in. Ushered it in.
Uh-huh. Oh, shut up. Yeah. We watched A Knight's Tale, and I got really angsty because of the chick's hair. I was like, oh, it's so 2001. Mm-hmm. Like, get out. It really bothered me, but yeah.
Rest in peace, so, Heath Ledger.
Stu was like, yeah, I saw a thing, and it was the Joker, Wash from Firefly, and Robert Baratheon go on an adventure.
Yeah.
And apparently, the script was based on a D&D campaign, so...
Oh.
In the fact that Chaucer is in it as well, and the fact that Agatha Christie did this too, so I think she copied it from Geoffrey Chaucer, but apparently he went missing for a short period of time, and he doesn't remember what happened during this missing time. That's when the movie is kind of supposed to have happened, so that's kind of cool.
I literally only know that Agatha Christie disappeared for an amount of time
because of Doctor Who.
Yeah, where, like, she's gone because, like, she was fucking around with the Doctor, and they were, like, on an adventure, and she had to choose, right? It was, like, keep your memories or something else happened, so she chose to, like, forget what happened.
No, I think the ultimate, I love the episode, mostly because it's Agatha Christie, but, mm-hmm. And it's, like, super cliche murder mystery, which is
extremely.
But I think the, like, ultimate moral dilemma at the end is, do they save the wasp priest, or do they let him drown?
Mm-hmm.
So
this is a very pro-Doctor Who podcast as well. We don't talk about Doctor Who a lot. I think this is probably, like, one of a handful of times, but, like, yeah. This is a very pro-Doctor Who household.
I will talk about Doctor Who for hours and hours, and I think that's why I don't bring it up a lot, because I know that we'll just go down a rabbit hole.
Yes.
And I also know that it's a very niche rabbit hole, because Doctor Who is one of those things that you either fucking love or you, like, completely hate. So,
yeah. There's a YouTuber that I haven't watched his videos yet, but he summarizes, like, seasons of Doctor Who at a time, and one of my friends is a, like, big fan of his, so I'll find that eventually, and maybe we'll, like, do a Doctor Who cast about, like, Monsters of the Week, in essence, which is just what Doctor Who is, in addition to, like, overarching plot. And that'll be a fun time for us, and if you want to, like, join along, you can just watch, like, these 45-minute videos that summarize, like, 12 hours of TV.
Okay, so to wrap up, I figured, let's talk about what the Church of Satan is all about, and at the end, you can rant about Sabrina.
Sure.
Get ready. Cool. Get ready.
I'm not going to think about it at all because I'm already mad, and I don't want to continue to be mad until it's my time to vent.
Like I said, the Church of Satan was founded by Anton LaVey in 1966. I'm not going to lie. I was ready to sign up. I'm not, like, it just sounds so reasonable. Mm-hmm. So here we go. I'm not going to go into all of the things, but I read through every single section of their FAQ. And I'm going to point out the bits I thought were the coolest or the most stereotype shattering. So members do call themselves Satanists, but they don't worship the devil. They are atheists who believe that the universe is indifferent towards all humans and that morals and values are all human constructs. And they see themselves at the center of their own universe. So, like, you don't worship a deity. If you were to worship anything, it would be yourself, if so, you have to put it in that mind frame.
Yes, you're, like, nihilist atheist, in essence. Okay.
They don't believe in Satan as a being or person. They use him more like a symbol of individualism. Mm-hmm. And they point out specifically that Satan is the pre-Christian Hebrew word, which originally translated to the opposition or the accuser, because they stand in opposition to theist religions and their inherent hypocrisy.
Oh, interesting. That makes sense.
I know! It makes so much sense.
Like,
so,
this, yeah.
They don't make sacrifice. Like, the question is, like, do you make sacrifices? And they were like, no, because we don't believe in anything supernatural in which you would make a sacrifice.
Hmm.
So, and then one of the other questions was, like, do you believe in child abuse or pornography or blah, blah, blah? And they're like, we don't believe, we're not about any kind of abuse, pedophilia, non-consenting sex, harming animals, or any of the other stereotypes. They're a very law and order based philosophy. And it's like, do whatever you want as long as it doesn't harm other people or like nature or animals, which is cool.
So pretty much like devil worshippers are different than like members of the Church of Satan.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So they're like people who think they're Satanists because they worship Satan, but like they're not Satanists. They're devil worshippers.
Mm-hmm.
Satanists are atheists. Yeah. And then they say that they're proud to explore mysteries, whether it's scientific, behavioral, or mysteries of the truly occult. They don't have regular services or congregations, and they don't believe that just because you live next door to another Satanist that you will or should have anything in common with them. And they're like a very merit-based philosophy. They will look at, well, one, they believe that if you want something, you have to work for it. Like, you don't get handed anything just because. And they also will like look at your achievements in your career or hobbies or whatever, and they'll connect you with other Satanists that way.
Weird club. Because,
but to them, those connections have proven more successful than like just hanging out with other Satanists because they live in the same town as you or something.
Mm-hmm.
They have no connection with the Satanic Temple, which is a satirical group. And they have no connection with the church or the Temple of Set, which was established by someone after they resigned from the Church of Satan.
Because they wanted to eat babies and sacrifice goats. And they're like, oh, this is
whack. I don't really know what the Temple of Set is about, but I think they had some disagreements on how certain things were done and they wanted to do things differently. So they started their own little thing. They believe that if people want to become members of the church, they'll find their own way. They don't produce like pamphlets or brochures or literature to pass out because they think it's rude and contrary to their behavior to like shove it in people's faces, and they don't want to be hypocrites because they don't think the churches should do that either. One of the symbols that was used by LaVey in his original Satanic Bible is the alchemical symbol for sulfur. And on their FAQ, it says, the stench produced when this substance is burned has long been associated with the infernal regions. Dr. LaVey used it as a spooky decoration, and it has no other significance despite some hilarious interpretations by evangelical Christians.
Wow.
They're super no bullshit. Like, that's fucking dumb.
Mm-hmm.
They advocate free will, and they don't let minors officially join the church unless their parents are members, and they're doing so of their own free will, not because their parents want them to.
Mm-hmm.
They use terms and symbols associated with blasphemous things. Ironically, they believe that 666 is just a number, but they'll use it on purpose in like a phone number. Like, they'll purposefully get in a phone number just to piss off somebody who's going to read into it and like make a big deal out of it.
Interesting.
Which I think is really funny. Like, they're ultimate trolls.
Yeah.
Let's see. They don't make their priests perform ceremonies. If someone was like, I want a satanic wedding ceremony,
mm-hmm.
they don't like make whatever priest is in that area go and perform that ceremony just because those people want one. The members getting married would have to know a priest and ask them personally, and then the priest would have to agree to do it if they want to or not. Because it's a self-centered practice, the biggest holiday of the year is your own birthday. I hate celebrating my birthday, so it's the only downside for me, but they say that you don't have to celebrate your birthday in the traditional ways. It should just be a day spent doing the things that you enjoy doing or with people that you enjoy being around. And also, I love Christmas, so that would be a downside. But they also celebrate nature holidays, like those rooted in more pagan traditions, like solstices, the equinox. So I take Yule, that'd be okay. It's basically the same as Christmas. For Halloween, they see that as a night when mundane folk try to reach down and touch the darkness for the darkness which Satanists do as a daily practice. What do I always say? Every day is Halloween. Do I not always say that?
Like, that's what Georgia says all the time.
I'm already there.
Yep.
That's not what I say. And I saw this other thing, and it was like, you know, just think about the Addams Family and you'll get a good idea of what we're about. And I was like, yeah, the Addams Family. Like, that's my life goals.
Mm-hmm.
Life aesthetic goal. So the church fully accepts gay, lesbian, bi, trans, pan, poly, a full spectrum sexuality. All sex is cool as long it is between two or more consenting adults. No kink shaming.
No
Whatever
kink
you're
shaming.
into.
No
Yep.
kink shaming.
And then they make the distinction that their philosophy is Epicurean and not hedonistic. So, like, the greatest good is to seek modest pleasure in order to attain a state of tranquility. So it's like everything in moderation, which I can totally get behind. It just sounds so reasonable. It's like kind of elitist when you're reading it. It's kind of elitist, and like, if you don't like it, fuck you. You don't have to be affiliated with us. But also, like, that makes sense. Like, there was one section of their FAQ that's titled "For Christians Who Are Concerned About Us," and it's like, I'm a Christian and I feel I need to tell you about Jesus because I think you're going to hell. And it's like, what did your savior say? Don't judge other people. You're sinning and you're a fucking hypocrite. Bye. Church of Satan, not at all like the Church of Satan and Sabrina. Now you can rant.
Sabrina is not a good show, okay? Like, I get it if you like the aesthetic or if you like witty young girl that's out to like find her own whatever. That's cool, but like, it's a bad show overall. It is not really entertaining, and I think that people become enamored with all of like with the few specific details that they like and cherry pick out and assume that they like the entire show because of it. So I am a slut for a good like teenage drama. That should be known at this point. I love a good teenage drama, like so good. And like, so for instance, like Riverdale, which is made by the same people, if everyone wore black in that show, you'd probably just love that as well. You know, like there's if Cheryl Blossom was always wearing black, you'd be like, this is my queen. Yes, like this is all I want. But she should still be your queen. She just wears red instead of black. It
Which is the color of blood.
exactly,
Hello.
yes, which I'm pretty sure she mentions a few times as she almost murders dudes because they disrespect her. Like, it is, I just don't understand why people are so forgiving for sloppy writing, for musical episodes that don't make sense canonically. Like, the reason that it works in Riverdale is that almost the whole cast are musicians anyway, in universe. Like,
Yeah.
everyone is either a musician or friends with a musician or an artist. So when they're like, Archie's singing and he's been working on these new songs, I'm gonna sing kind of to make fun of him, but also because, like, I appreciate that he wants to do this. Or, like we said last
Yeah.
episode, in Scrubs, when there's a musical episode, there's a woman who hears everything in song because she has a, like, a traumatic head injury, I think.
Like that show on fucking Hulu that I don't understand.
What show?
Something imaginary. Babe, come here. We'll find out.
Okay.
It's like she falls down and it's a head injury, and then like she sees everyone's emotions in music. What's that show called on Hulu with the songs, and it's got Lorelai from Gilmore Girls, and I can't see her as anything other than Lorelai, so I hate it. Zoe's Ultimate Playlist.
Extraordinary.
Extraordinary Playlist. Whatever. Okay, thanks, bye.
That sounds like something I would like. But yeah, like
Yeah.
that's at least like a canonical reason. And in Sabrina, there's a very small group of people who can play instruments, very small group of people who like the music or like want to sing. Also, the band is bad. So that also pisses me off that we are given this creative angsty outlet through these like through these teenagers, and they suck. And why is everyone else about them
Also,
singing in just random episodes? It doesn't make sense.
the one where it's like in season three and they're like doing their shit in the forest and they're all just like singing randomly, I don't get it. Also, when she's like trying to make her father happy and they sing the fucking Masquerade song from Phantom of the Opera,
Yes,
why?
do
I
not.
don't get it.
It doesn't
Why
make.
are you ruining that song?
It's just because it's edgy. Because the Phantom of the Opera is edgy, and it doesn't make sense. If you enjoy Sabrina, like, that's fine. I'm glad that you can find things that you enjoy or characters you can see yourself in, and like that is an outlet which you like. That's totally fine. But like for me personally, it is just like so abstract, and I can't find enough of those things that I enjoy from the show to like tie together to say that I overall enjoy the experience. It is ridiculous to me. And there's things that I do like that are cool, like when the spoiler alert for Sabrina, I guess, in season three, when the Satanists meet the pagans in the woods, and like the Satanists are trying to get favor from, I think this is right before Lilith, so they're trying to just get favor from like the moon. They're trying to like soak in some energy the moon through an ancient ritual, and the Paganists are like, well, why don't you just worship the earth you're on instead of the moon? And they're like, because fuck the earth, like it's just a thing. We're here for the people that we care about and for a body that we can work towards. I was like, that was kind of cool. You know, stick up for what you believe in. Canonically, it makes sense. Like, all that stuff. That's awesome. And then it just changes. And it doesn't make sense in the Paganists as a whole. Very cool, very compelling villains. Like, they're very opposite of what the Church of Lilith, Church of Satan, whatever, believe. And they're consistent with what they believe. And that makes sense to me. And then Sabrina just does some bullshit for fun. And everyone's like, ooh, woo, Sabrina. Like, that's such a good idea. And I don't know. It's just so hard for me to believe what's happening at any given point. Because every time they have a good beat in that show, it just changes for no reason. And not in a complex or interesting way. Something just changes for the sake of changing. And it pisses me off. Or it just makes me lose interest, and I roll my eyes so far back into my head that I can see these thoughts hitting the fucking, like, top of my skull that I don't like the show. And as my eyes roll back to the front, I'm reminded, as I'm made to watch the show again, that I'm not enjoying it. And it's just so much. I hate it. I don't hate the show. I just hate the experiences I occasionally have during the show. It makes me so dramatic.
I like season one enough. Season one was fine.
Season one, I was like, this has legs. Like, this is gonna keep evolving, you know? It was a good, it was a good foundation.
But then like, season two, she turned into a bitch for no reason. And in season three, her boyfriend was hella fucking whiny for no reason. Yes. And like,
Well, I kind of got it. It was like, you got your body was possessed by, like, by Satan. That's a lot. And you're going through all this, like, PTSD of the trauma you went through. I understand that, but instead of emphasizing the fact that, like, he went through this trauma and that he's working through a lot of complex emotions, which he's probably, like, 16 in the show, he's supposed to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, as a very young adult, like, as a young adult/child, like, you're so young. You don't know how you feel about these things, and you've lived for, I think, what's supposed to be, like, dozens or hundreds of years in this torture. You're scared. But instead of focusing on any of that, he's just like, I just want hookers and blow. Hookers and blow, fix my problems. You don't like hookers and blow? Fuck you. And I'm like, what is, you were, no. Like, you don't even need to acknowledge these issues you're going through. I just want the show to kind of, like, warp everything around you a little bit. Like, I just want the perspective to shift as a viewer so we can at least see that that's always where he's coming from. Even if outwardly, he's just being very standoffish and angry. Yeah. He's lashing out and he's misinterpreting these things around him. Because we know that it's all coming from a place of hurt. Instead, it's coming from a place of him being a little bitch that just wants hookers and blow. And it's,
It's coming off as like Harry Potter, Order of the Phoenix movie when you haven't read the book, so you don't understand why he's being such an angsty bitch in the first place.
Harry Potter and the Order of the Little Bitch. Like, I don't like it. Like, it's not Harry Potter. Harry Potter's great. I love it. But, you are completely right. It's like they had a source material that they just left out critical details because they assumed that you would infer it, or they assumed that it would carry.
Yeah.
And it doesn't carry in the way that it should have. Like, they needed to continue building. If these seasons were longer, or if it was spread out from 3 to 4 seasons and we saw more individual, like, character interaction, that'd be cool. There's very few people that I think have developed relationships in the show, period. Like, there's not a reason that it should be like this either, because they released the first season on Halloween, or Halloween season. The second season released, like, 6 months later, and the third season was released also not around Halloween. It was either before or after. So I'm like, why didn't you just say, we're gonna only make this show on, on Halloween, and then on off Halloweens, we'll have a small, like, mini seasons or kind of, like, filler things.
Yeah.
It would have been so easy to do, and they would still get the viewers, they'd still get the hype, because every year on Halloween, you know Sabrina's coming, and you know For these other like weird like these pagan holidays or these like in-universe holidays that we're gonna get an episode, we're gonna get a mini series or a mini season about this, and it's something to build up to. But instead, they're just like, we're just gonna force out all this stuff, and hopefully you just take it in because you like that everyone wears black, and that Harvey's sad, yeah, and he's heartbroken, and all this stuff. Like,
he's annoying when he's sad. Jesus Christ. He's a whiny little bitch, too.
He also has so much reason to be hurt, and it's just not explored upon. Like, he had to watch, I think, like, I may be wrong here, but he watched his brother die. You know, he knows that his ex-girlfriend mystically compelled his father to stop drinking when all he wanted was for his father to care about their family enough to stop drinking. You know? Like, all he wanted was his partner, and he couldn't have her, and
brought his brother back from the dead into a creepy fucking bastard who wasn't actually his brother, that he had to fucking murder himself. So now he just has this vision of actually murdering his brother.
Exactly, because he couldn't tell the difference. There's so many reasons. He's like with a girl that he thinks that he cares the world for, but he's made to confront the fact that he doesn't love her the way he consciously and emotionally and physically feels he does because of Sabrina, you know, and because of some things that she puts him through, but we don't see any of that. It's like one episode, like, or part of two episodes, like, here and done, over. No development. Harvey's just a whiny little child. And that's not the case. He's going through a lot of complex stuff. And you should either, maybe that's my overall beef. They need to either drop the complexity they're trying to give these kids, or just give it to them and expand the seasons, because this middle way stuff is so poorly done. It's just so poorly executed. Ugh. Okay, thus concludes my rant on Sabrina. If you want to watch it so you know what I'm talking about and you haven't, it's on Netflix. It's all available. Tell me if you agree. Tell me if you don't agree. Like, I will continue to watch it because I'm continually hoping that it does more, and continually hoping that, because, like, the writers for these shows, like these Netflix and CW, that's why it's not a CW show, it's just in the universe.
It's a Netflix original.
Yeah, it's a Netflix original. But it's like in the same universe as the CW shows. I'm still hoping that it builds in the same way that, like, we see in Riverdale, Jughead's relationship evolve with his father, and Betty does have some beats that don't hit quite right, but I always see her relationship with her coming to terms with who her father is, and like coming to terms with like who her mother is, and seeing Jellybean come in and out of the show as a very side character who has so much stuff going on, and she's still very very compelling and very realistic and very believable. And Cheryl and
she has like a lot of her own. I think it mostly shows in season one, where she like has always shown digging her fingernails into her hands, but like she has a lot of fucking anger issues 100%. That she's got to deal with. That like, Jesus Christ!
Because it's like, you don't want to become your mom, you don't want to become your dad. Who are you? It's like the overall like, I think all of these shows and just kind of teen drama as a whole is a very heavy theme of who are you and who do you want to be, which is very relatable. That's probably why I like that kind of genre, as opposed to a lot of more mature shows, which assume you already have all these things figured out. But as we are 20 and 20s, mid-20s, and like 30-year-old, and we're still figuring our shit out. Like, if you don't have your shit figured out and you're our age, you're fully understood here. If you were in your 40s or 50s and still don't have your shit figured out, that's all right, too. And I think it's very cool to see characters that look like your age that are also going through this. Because even, like, Jughead's dad is constantly changing and constantly going through this stuff as he's figuring himself out. And so is the Kevin's dad. Does the same thing where he loses his job that he's had forever. And you find stuff out about his past. And it comes into his present. And he's grappling with that. And he's, I think, actually, like, 50-something. Like, low 50s. These shows are very, very cool and very, very good at that. That's probably why I like them so much. But Sabrina doesn't do that, and that's why I don't like Sabrina as much as I should.
The coolest thing I think about Sabrina is that Salem's not just a talking cat like he is in the original Sabrina, that he's like this actual impish, I don't really know, like spirit energy thing that just takes the form of a cat so that he can go normal places.
But I and also like, have beef with that, because the only reason he's not in the show more is because Sabrina's allergic to cats. Like, the actress that plays Sabrina is, has a cat allergy. So, like, Salem can't be on the show. Yeah, exactly. Like, they could have done an animatronic cat like they did in the original. And I think it would have been cool if he did what you're saying more. And he was just an imp that served the... What's Sabrina's last name? Fuck, what's their family name?
Spellman.
Yeah. So if he, like, was bound to the Spellman family because of an event that happened, and we know that Sabrina's cousin... does a lot of summoning, a lot of, like, studies regarding, like, stuff like that. So it'd be cool if he accidentally brought Salem in, and Salem's like,
well, and he's, like, one of my favorite characters in the show.
He's so good. He's probably the only character I like 24/7.
Yeah.
He's so great, and I love him. But yeah, like, and so it just feels like they copped out by just saying, oh, well, he's just not gonna be there all the time. And if you didn't watch any other Sabrina, like, source material, you wouldn't even know about Salem, probably. And you'd just be like, oh, yeah, they have an indoor outdoor cat. Like, no, they have a hyper-intelligent being that chooses to be with them, or that is bound to them, that, like, that helps them through these different ways.
As soon as you said that, she just, like, looked up and was like...
Me?
What?
Are we talking about familiars? So yeah, they do more than they did with, if you're not familiar with the, it's like late, it's like 90s, early 2000s Sabrina show. Like, Salem was just like a kind of goofy character, like he would make jokes and he's like fat and he loves to hang out and he just would like throw.
The nail filing meme.
Yes. He was very good, but he's also very like sitcomish in that, in the cartoon Sabrina show. Same thing, Salem's just like a meme character who throws jokes and throws shade. So they had a lot of room to kind of go the polar opposite, but instead they kind of just dropped the pretense of who he was before and hoped that you would be okay with what he is now, which is, you know, an indoor-outdoor, maybe imp familiar, you know? Like, he's somewhere in that range.
Demon-esque cat.
Yeah, demon-esque.
He can fuck shit up when he doesn't look like a cat.
Exactly. Just the like end. Georgia and Luna, not me. I'd cry too fast. Right, so
and this has gone on really long, and I'm hungry, so... Yes.
What is your favorite, I guess, Satanist-related thing? Or, like, Church of Satan-related thing? Or sad thing? Because that story just made me sad.
I know!
Also, what's your favorite chicken coop? Any of those questions?
Well... my house in Washington had a chicken coop. That was pretty great. Nice. We had 12 chickens, and they all had cool names. I think I've talked about that before. I'm probably going to read a lot more about the Church of Satan.
Another episode. If you tell me when you're going to do that, and if you want to do another episode, I'll rewatch all of Sabrina, and I'll take notes this time, and maybe I'll be less upset. But, like, I highly doubt it.
Broadcast from the Veldfree review hate cast of Sabrina.
For real. My favorite chicken coop is in the Toy Story 2 video game for the N64, where in Al's Toy Barn, there's chickens that you have to collect. They're very cute. Also, I'm from Georgia, so once again, yeehaw, that's my favorite Georgia fact. Also, yeehaw, that someone in this podcast name is Georgia. Second favorite Georgia fact. If you liked or disliked what you heard today, we would love some feedback. You can like us, review us, anywhere that you can listen to podcasts. You can also contact us via Facebook, Twitter, Instagram by searching Broadcast from the Belfry in the search bar or emailing us at broadcastfromthebelfry@gmail.com. We also do have a link tree now, and that has all of the contact information below. I just pointed down, and that's not really what's going on. You won't know that, but that is where this link tree is, and you can contact us through that. Thank you to Marshall for making our music. You make us sound very professional, and I am a big fan of that. Once again, if you'd like stickers, you can contact us via any of that social media stuff or email inquiry, and we can take care of everything there. You also can do something, and we'll send you a sticker, probably. I don't know, just, like, tell your mom to email us saying that she hates our guts, and we'll probably send you a sticker. Who knows?
Send us 7 box tops.
7 box. Send us 7 box tops that will not go to education. Actually, if you do send them to us, I'll eat them and Georgia will learn, or like, we'll read something. That's how it's for education. Yes. 70 cents worth. Okay. Yeah, Georgia, any last thoughts?
We eat them with milk.
What do we say to these healthy, balanced diet, rose gardening, having folks who choose to spend their time with us on this wonderful day?
Thanks for listening. Stay spooky. No kink shaming.
No kink shaming sluts. Remember that. Yep. All right. You're not a slut because of your sexual promiscuity. You're a slut because you kink shame someone, and I'm upset about it. And I remember. Broadcast from the Belfry remembers. Hey, Billy. I'm on you.